plumbers become super plumbers, installing a super quick water dispenser. Superquick.com.au.
Things got ultra sexy on Between the Sheets today.
Oh my God.
Well, I was just answering questions about swingers because apparently it's a thing and they've got a dungeon. Yep. I mean, I think those two things are worth a conversation.
What were those, that bloke that rang up? How many, what were the rooms called?
They were called
playrooms.
Playrooms.
Down at Chateau Vino on the Goldie. I tell you what, there was a lot of swinger talk.
He had 11 playrooms. What's that?
I'm swing curious.
I'll find out some more information and bring it back to you.
We remember Expo 88 very fondly. And Channel 9's money man, Ross Greenwood, it's always a pleasure to hear from him. Somehow we've avoided a trade war crisis. Well, somehow it's all thanks to Greg Norman, the shark, playing around a golf.
Oh, isn't it? Actually, why wouldn't he be our roving PM? Why do we need to vote for one? Everyone happy with the shark as our PM? Because he could just go around and have games of golf with Putin, with Kim Jong-un, who is the world's greatest golfer, if we remember correctly.
Annoying expat accent.
Oh, he does got an annoying expat accent.
But doesn't mind getting nude. Remember that for a nude 63 or whatever
old
he is?
Well, if you look like that, wouldn't you get nude?
Very true. We love nude elderly men here at Triple M. Enjoy the catch-up.
Do we?
No, no, no.
Oh, we're so lucky to have him joining us every week, our Prime Minister, Rich Uncle Mal. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, Marto. Hello to you, Moonman, and to you, Robin Bailey, and of course, young Brendo, and to everybody listening to Triple M in Brisbane 104.5.
Now, look, is it true that Greg Norman, the Great White Shark, has convinced Donald Trump not to impose tariffs on the steel and aluminium industry here?
Well, Robin, I know you were just speaking to Channel 9's Ross Greenwood, and yes, that is true. Greg is a great friend of mine and a great friend of Mr. Trump's in the US. Let me hasten to add, Robin, too, he's not actually a shark. A shark would never choke as much as he has. No, he's just a man with a terrifically annoying accent. Now, because Greg's success, because of it, we are now thinking of using other former sports stars in other diplomatic missions. Oh. And I think it's a good idea. Merv Hughes will lead a tourism delegation to Turkey because they love big moustaches there.
Yes, they do.
Ian Thorpe's off to Athens because... they love gods and Adonises. Don't be quick to judge. And, of course, Dawn Fraser will be sent to Syria to negotiate a peace deal because they also love moustaches. Because even Bashar al-Assad would soil himself if he saw our Dawny coming through the doors of Damascus. Okay. Big Dawny rumbling in.
Okay, so back to Parliament in Australia. Your mate Christopher Pyne celebrating 25 years in Parliament. Are you going to throw him a party? I know you're close.
Well, Christopher Pyne and myself are very close allies, and I am going to throw him a party, but Christopher's a bit of a party organiser himself. He's just here. Christopher, they want to have a chat to you. Hello, everyone. I'm a fixer and a maker, and I'm going to organise myself a big 25th party, too. There'll be party poppers and hats and a pinata. Pump it. Hit it. Hit it. Hit it. Make the stuff come out. We're going to have little boys and Fanta. Okay. And when I say that, I mean Savoys. Yeah. It's going to be fairy bread.
Mr. Pine.
Christopher, give us the phone back.
Oh, no. Can I just... It sounds a bit like we've got an entertainment reporter, Barry Shriekman. Bobby Shriekman.
Bobby Shriekman. I love Bobby Shriekman. Yes. Christopher, I think you sound like Bobby Shriekman. Excuse me, I sound nothing like Bobby Shriekman. I get excited sometimes and giggle with it. Okay, good on you.
All right. Sorry.
Okay, Prime Minister, you were on 7:30 last night. How did you think you went?
Oh, Lee Sales, for goodness sake. I've tried to shut down that communist mouthpiece that is the ABC, $254 million worth of cuts over 5 years. If I'm asked about the 30th news poll one more time, I'm going to knock somebody right out. I mean, I haven't got the upper body strength to do that, but I've had a gutful. You can stick your news polls right where the sun doesn't shine, Lee Sales. I feel like reaching across the desk and giving her one right across the chops.
Right, okay.
It wasn't a complete waste of time. I got to say, ensure, reassure, negotiate, reiterate, and also Lee. That's what I do to her when I'm getting annoyed. But before I go, I just want to say I've been singing along. Yes, in fact, sir. Your last song gazumped me because I'm loving The Killers. I got gas in the tank. I got money in the bank. I got news for you, baby. You're looking at the man. Lucy loves it. I got skin in the game. I got a household name. I got news for you, baby. You're looking at the the moon. Now, before I go, I just want to say the Triple M Brisbane Rock Chateau Vino Swingers Club down on the Goldie.
How do you know about that, sir?
Well, we like a little bit of role-playing, Lucy and I. I have been known to knock on the doors of the lower house with the usher of the Black Rod, if you know what I mean.
Okay, sir.
Very good.
Okay.
Good on you. Bye now.
Bye, Rich Uncle Mal.
Warning, the following segment contains serious, sexy talk and music from Kenny G.
Between the Sheets with Robin Bailey.
Now, normally I bring you statistics and interesting tidbits that we can discuss amongst ourselves, but today it needs to be interactive because page 3 of the Courier Mail is talking about the swingers' turf war. Apparently.
What?
Yeah. In Arana Hills, there is a swingers' dungeon.
Quiet old Arana Hills.
Quiet old Arana Hills.
It's the quiet ones you've got to watch, isn't
it? Yeah, you betcha. Now, these guys are having a fight with the Moreton Bay Regional Council over some renovations to a property. That in itself is not very interesting. The thing that is interesting is that the person who owns this swingers dungeon, a man by the name of Master Lex, says
Lex.
The reason...
What does that rhyme with?
Thank you. Yeah. The reason why this has gone to the council is because apparently there is another swingers organisation that is now trying to break the monopoly. So clearly, in Brisbane, we are having a swingers culture that none of us here at Triple M know anything about.
Or claim not to. So both dungeons are in Arana Hills.
Well... The dungeon is in Arana Hills, and perhaps there is a movable feast of swingers that are operating in a similar area that don't need a dungeon. But I just am so curious about
are they doing any dogging or is it just swinging?
We don't know.
Oh, dogging is a different kettle of fish, my friend.
Would you dip your toe in both?
Do not.
What is dogging?
Do not dip your toe in the doggy water.
We're not asking questions.
Stay on the track.
Do you want me to tell you what dogging is quickly?
I don't think I do.
No, it's watching people.
No, thank you.
While you
stop.
In a car park. I'm just going to leave out all the bits. You're watching. And something else
you
is happening.
You can't help yourself, can you? You've just been told no.
I'm a dogger.
So let's stick to swinging.
Oh, not a swinger. Okay, so...
But if you're just walking past the car park...
Because there is this incredible swinging network within our fair city, I feel the need to be interactive with this and find out about it. Mick, bless your cotton socks. You have called through on 133353. Anyone can be involved. And you are a part of a swingers club. Is this correct?
Yeah, I actually own Chateau Vino, a swingers club down on the Gold Coast. And we've been there for nearly 7 years, fully council approved.
Okay, what does this mean? What happens if you...
You've got a dungeon, Mick?
We have a lifestyle bondage room set up there.
Oh, no,
that's different.
A lifestyle bondage room. So what do people do? Do they pay money to be part of this?
And they just pay an entrance fee to come in.
And then
On Saturday nights, we can get anywhere between 20 and 100 plus couples there, depending on the
couples.
So you've
got to come in as a couple.
Yep.
So you can't just turn up as a single.
On our Saturday nights, we do allow some single guys to come along on a Friday night, but we're very selective and very limited in the numbers.
Okay,
so explain to me. A couple comes in, they go into this room, and there are lots of other couples, and then
We're set up similar to a boutique nightclub with a nice-sized lounge area, a big outdoor beer garden area.
Sounds nice.
Nice dance floor. We get DJs in. And, we've got our BYO bar there and 11 different play areas.
And so then...
When
couples are dancing away and having a few drinks, do they then go and select another couple and say, hey, let's go and play?
Yeah, and they might strike up a conversation with another couple. They might want to... stay at the club or head off home or together or whatever. That's up to them.
What's a play area?
It's just a bedroom set up for a couple to go off and play in.
Adult play.
And is it a locked door between two sets of couples or is it open?
Yeah. No, there is a you can close the doors, lock the doors.
Or you can leave it
the door open. Yeah, it's up to you.
Wow.
I prefer the door open.
The individual. And you'd be amazed how many, we've got over 3,500 members of our club.
Wow.
How many members of the Liberal Party are down there on a Saturday night?
we've got people from all walks of life and discretion's a must in this industry.
Yeah, so you wouldn't tell me if Warwick Kappa was a member, would you?
No, I wouldn't tell you if anybody's a member.
Well done, good you, on you, mate.
Are you involved in any sort of turf war with the Serana Hills mob?
No. We've got no drama. No, you find most of the clubs, you know, they all run their own individual style of business, every single one's different.
In fairness to Mick, just one more time, what's the name of your club?
Chateau Vino.
Go down and get...
Yeah, jump on the net, chateauvino.com.au, and you'll... can read all about it.
Lovely.
We'll give it away as a prize later on in the morning.
Learn a little bit. We're going to
dogging down the Chateau Vino.
That's enough. You're about to get a yellow. We're going to go have a shower and head back at 6:30 on Brisbane's Triple M.
All right. So we keep hearing about global trade war, but we seem to have escaped a bullet. We don't really know what's going on. And the smartest man we know in terms of economics is Ross Greenwood, Channel 9's money man. Morning, mate.
Morning. How's it all travelling?
Well, we're confused as always.
Well, seriously?
Global trade war. What does it mean?
So the global trade war is about this. Basically, Donald Trump says, I'm not happy with the amount of steel that we get into America from China. I'm not so happy with the amount of aluminium that pours into America from, say, Canada, say, for example. And so what I want to do is I want to protect jobs in the steel industry in America, in the aluminium industry in America. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, on imported steel, on imported aluminium, raise taxes. So when sometimes you hear the word tariff, just think of the word tax.
Oh, okay.
Effectively a tax on imports. So let's say, for example, in that case, he says by actually putting on extra taxes on Chinese steel coming into America, it's going to make it more expensive. That means American steel is more competitive. That means we make more steel here in America. And as a result, we keep the jobs in America as well. The only problem is that, as you know, we got free trade agreements with America, with China, all that sort of stuff. You're trying to reduce the amount of tariffs or protection. Right. So say, for example, one good example is here in Australia, the car industry. Years and years ago, 50s, 60s, 70s, the car industry was protected by very, very high tariffs. It's the reason why we had Commodores and why we had Fords and why we had Toyotas made in this country. But as the tariffs dropped, we suddenly got a flood of cars coming into Australia from other countries. And guess what? As the tariffs dropped, the cars got cheaper for the consumer. And so as a result, ultimately, the car industry disappeared out of Australia. The manufacturing stopped simply because they couldn't compete and couldn't keep up with cheaper cars made overseas. So this is what the trade war is going to be about.
Tell us about the role that Greg Norman has played in exempting Australia from those tariffs slash taxes.
Yeah, this is not a bad story, is it? So obviously Greg Norman is a mate of Donald Trump's. They've played golf together.
Yep.
And he's been, if you like, a bit of a conduit through Joe Hockey, the former treasurer who's now our ambassador over there. So because Australia does send steel to America, and that's through BlueScope, but they've also got a plant over there which employs 3,000 people. So what's happened is that they've got in the ear of Donald Trump and said, hey, listen, Donald, we are pretty good mates of yours. And so we think not only will you be hurting American jobs if you put these tariffs on in Australia, but on top of that also, let's remember that we are pretty good defence allies of yours. And so Donald Trump, for some reason, has decided to exempt Australia from these tariffs that he's going to hit on the rest of the world and especially China.
So he's basically exempted us from tariffs for a game of golf.
No, actually, when you put it in those terms, yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like as well.
Yeah,
but what do China look at us and think? Oh, you crawly buggers.
Well, they're going to think a lot worse of us if we join with Donald Trump and start sailing our naval vessels through those artificial man-made islands that they've put defence airports on, aren't they? So we've got to play a very delicate game here because on one hand, we have a free trade agreement with China.
Yep.
And guess where China makes its steel from? It makes it from the iron ore that we dig up in the Pilbara.
Our really good iron ore, yep.
And given the fact that our economy and the taxes you pay and the sort of health and welfare system you enjoy comes from the taxes that come out of that iron ore, Australia, as I say, has just got to be a little careful how it plays this game.
Oh, God bless you, Channel 9's money man, Ross Greenwood. You always make it easy for us to understand. Thank you, Ross.
No problems at all.
Our house came to a standstill during the news last night because I've got a son who's an apprentice carpenter and myself. There was a tradesman story. Listen to some of this stuff.
Queensland tradies are being accused of ripping off customers, price gouging per postcode. What? Those living closer to the city could be paying more, but there is a way to spot and avoid the scam.
How do you spot and avoid the scam?
Now, you are a tradie. Do you have you got a dual pricing system for different postcodes?
Late at night. All right. Well, now, these days, I only do jobs for friends, people who live interstate or overseas who have got investment houses. I go and look after their place and fix this and fix that, or for divorced women who haven't got any money. So I'm now a good bloke. okay? But in the old days, at late at night.
Divorced women who haven't got any money, they've got all the money.
No, not the divorced women we know. No, that's okay. Not true. That's a misnomer. And so I go around and help them out, mate, okay? But in the old days, when I was ruthless, I found out that Ascot was a wealthy suburb, and I started to do a lot of work there. And as we were saying before, there's no McDonald's in Ascot. There's one nearby.
Right.
Wealthy suburbs don't have McDonald's, all right? You'd have a look, and late at night when you had to go, do I add 15%? Do I add 20%? Do I add 25%? You'd always add 25%, knowing that I bet I'm up against somebody who's going to charge a lot because you know they've got two Mercs in the garage, and they've got a beautiful house, and they'll pay.
Can I ask you this? When you're going into a rich person's house as a tradie,
yep.
Do you tradie it up, i.e. unshaven and dirty, to look like a tradie that works hard, or do you put on your Sunday best now, tradie and comb your hair?
Some tradies have got that theory, having a really nice ute, a top-of-the-market ute, to make it look as though they're very successful and they have their own shirt. I was never like that. I was rough and ready, with a dirty old ute. And unshaven and wore a hat, at all times. So didn't
and you
really
thought
care.
That projected the idea that you're more of a worker.
I wish I had thought more about it. I didn't think about the marketing psychology.
You could put it up to 50%.
No, well, you'd have a go. But to give you one, hold on, let's go through the stats first because this is what we're talking about.
The experts say you need to do your research, with some tradies charging up to 20% more for the same job just around the corner. Take, for example, here in Moorooka, the average price for a plumber is about $88 an hour, while in Yeerong Pilly, it could cost you $16 less.
I don't get those two. Like, I don't understand the difference between Yeerong Pilly and Moorooka. But I do know they're talking about New Farm, Hamilton, Cooperoo. I'll put Ascot in there. Bulimba I'll put in there. I'll put in Hawthorne. You jack your prices up because you know they've got money. If they can move into that suburb, they've got money. Is that ruthless?
Yes. Oh,
look, it...
Have you ever been ripped off?
Yes, I have.
Not by that bloke I gave you the other day.
No. And the reason why I now go to you and say, can you help me, is because I have been ripped off by someone who was very brazen about the fact that they were just in it for the money and figured that, I worked in the media and I was a single parent.
They
and
know you work, yep. They
see,
think
but I don't think it's solely the tradie's responsibility. I think that for me personally, and, yes, I do have to look at all these things and weigh them up. If someone gives me a bottom line price and the job will get done with nothing added to it, right, and they will deliver it by a certain time and I know that their work is good, then I'll pay
it. You'll pay for that.
I will pay for that because I don't want to end up having jobs drag on. Like if I'm actually committing to something, then I need it to get finished. But also, if you're putting in a quote and someone says yes to it, that is their responsibility. And if you live in Ascot or Hamilton or whatever, I mean, and look, I'm sounding a bit narky about it, but I've been through this process a couple of times now and I think you can't just go, oh, I'm being ripped off. Well, then find another tradie.
That's right.
Shop around.
But also, if I know we're making better money, we'll do a better job. On the Wednesday afternoon when you're not there and there's two ways to do the job, the good way or maybe the dodgy way. If you're not getting paid well, you'll do it the dodgy way.
And the other thing that I've done is that I've got a mate who's a handyman and I've had him come in. Now, he's not a qualified builder, but he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And a couple of times I've had him come in before I've paid off the final payment and I've said, is this okay? And he's gone, actually, this isn't and this isn't. And then I've called the tradie back. You watch how they jump.
Oh, yeah.
Because they think that just, I'm this little pathetic woman who's not going to stand up to stuff.
No. That's a good idea.
And I just gone, that's not okay. And he's like, oh. And I said, no, that's not finish properly and you need to do this and then they do it.
The finish is what you pay for.
So I don't think it's
Have
just
you got a McDonald's
tradies.
In your suburb?
No.
Oh, sweet.
Robert Amato, that before I landed in showbiz, I was an itinerant, a chancer, a drifter, a lonely outsider on the edge of town looking in.
Experiencing life,
done a whole lot of different jobs. And there's nothing like that first job that you get when you leave school and all of a sudden you've got cash. And it might be a stinky, shitty job, but you just love the independence of it. And one of those jobs for me was high-rise window cleaning. That was the last time I got my hands properly dirty doing a job.
High-rise window cleaning from above and dropping down.
I did an abseil. I was in the building maintenance unit. And we had a
gantry unit.
We had two or three different buildings that we do on rotation around town. And the thing I loved about that job was very zen. All you had to do was soap the window up, squeegee off, wipe the frame, go on to the next one.
But what about looking at the people inside?
You look at the people inside and, there was that old naughty movie, confessions of a high-rise window cleaner.
Yes, there was.
But there's none of that. There's no... You never see anything in an office.
You never see Barnaby and Vicky in there.
You never see any of that stuff. It's just
people sitting at computers. Never had anyone invite you in because you had a hot body or anything.
Do you know... No.
I think we know the answer to that.
Whoa, back then, it was 20 years ago. Back then I was pretty trim and lithe, actually.
And one arm would have been really...
Strong.
Really strong.
Squeegee. Squeegee muscular.
That's right. And on really hot days, you know, it's shirts off.
Just covered in soapy water and down to Shadow Vino on the Gold Coast.
Anyway.
You're wild boys afloat, aren't you?
Do you know what? I was very excited when somebody would come to the window and acknowledge you. Like if they saw the window cleaner and they'd wave
to you. They know you're there.
They don't know you're there because most people work with their backs to the window.
Who does that?
Nearly every office in the world. They're sitting at their computers with their backs to them.
They wouldn't be coming up to the window going, hey, come hither, young man. They'd be going, hey, there's a streak.
Yeah, zero breasts pushed against the window is my score.
Not even a brown eye from a male.
Nothing. Not a pressed ham. Not a thing. But I really love that job because, like I said, you had your work. You'd finish your days. Work and then go to the pub. Friday was the day we'd go down to the Rose and start drinking pints of Guinness. Loved it. Loved my days as a window cleaner. Plus, I just started comedy, and because your headspace is just this simple job, you're a lot more creative.
So, you had all day to think.
I loved it. And so what I'm saying today is remember those first jobs. What was it about your first job that you really loved? And for me, high-rise window cleaning was something that I remember fondly, and I'm going to make a return to it. We're putting it out there. I'm going to clean somebody's windows this week. I'm going to get high rise. I'm going to get the lamb's wool and the squeegee out. I'm going to soap up. I'm going to squeegee off. Maybe I'll get to see something I never saw before. I'm not saying, if you wanted me to stare at you.
Okay, before we get to that, do you want me to come and stare at you? Don't you want to hear about the jobs?
I want to hear about your first jobs. What did you really love? What was your first job?
The one that I didn't get paid for, but I loved, I volunteered at the RSPCA on my school holidays. Oh. So I'd go in and just pat like dogs and cats, and I'd walk the dogs to take them out of their kennels, and they were just so grateful. I love that job.
I'm wincing because I know that there's a lot of euthanasia has to happen at the RSPCA.
Yeah, we were part of that as well.
So
100
were you like
cats.
Susan Sarandon on death row, just patting dogs like saying it's going to be okay.
And then they get the needle.
No, it wasn't. What did you love about your first job? Now, it doesn't have to be a glamorous first job, but you might have loved one aspect of it. You just thought, hey, this is great.
Robbie Nardella was my boss at Sil Clean. He always used to do, I was a high-rise window cleaner. And he always used to do this thing. He'd be standing with his back to a sign that would say general manager and go, do you know where the general manager's office is? And I'd say, yeah, it's right behind you, Robbie. That was his
hilarious
joke every day.
Wow.
God love you, Robbie.
That's what window cleaning's like.
Hey, Paul, of Raceview, what did you love about your first job?
I loved it because it was an absolute adventure that went on for about 10 years. I joined the Navy when I was 15 and three quarters. I was just over the age limit. And as a junior recruit in those days, over to Western Australia. Then I joined the HMAS Perth for a deployment in the Persian Gulf in 1980, 3 days before 17th birthday.
Right.
Oh, sorry, the Gulf War.
It was just an adventure.
The first Gulf War.
Gulf War.
1990.
Good Lord.
Yep. So
I did two deployments there by the age of 17 and a half.
Why did you leave, Paul?
Oh, just circumstances changed in my marriage at that stage. I was stupid enough to get married. What's the bugger that was?
There's no room to sleep in those ships either, is there?
You soon learn. You soon learn to get along, but it was just an absolute adventure and made you into a man fairly quickly.
Yeah, good one, mate.
Awesome. Paul, I reckon Paul would have joined the Navy when their advertising slogan was, you'll be wet, you'll be homesick and frightened, but the pride of the fleet will be you.
Oh, I remember that ad.
Who joins? You'll be homesick.
Wasn't that a song?
Yeah. You'll be wet, you'll be homesick and frightened. Sure. It's like, what an advertising campaign.
Hey, Mark down in Cleveland, what job was it?
Well, first of all, I was a paper boy because I got paid to go and ride around the place as a kid. You know, you're only about 14, 15. You enjoy life and traveling. And then I started, I worked in the adult industry too. That was also a fun eye-opener, especially at 18.
You went from paper boy
to the adult industry. What were you doing in the adult industry, Mark?
Adult retail. So managing stores and all that sort of
naughty
stuff.
Like, stores.
I think it was a rite of passages in Adelaide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, Adelaide, Canberra. There's a rite of passage.
Oh, you're out of Fish Week.
Right.
Fish Week and Mitchell, yes. Yeah.
So you went from newspapers to glossies pretty quickly.
yeah, the rosies, you know. You can only deliver so much in a brown paper bag.
under the counter.
I have one for you, Moo Man. When you do your window cleaning, take a couple of people up there and do it to the soundtrack of The Village People. Really lather yourself up, use the whole conveyor belt and make it a show.
Mm. You have been in the adult industry, haven't you, Mark?
Wow. Is this more for you, Mark, or for me? Anyway.
Paul of Logan.
Conveyor belt.
What did you enjoy about your first job?
Ball boy every Saturday for the local, my dad's local footy club, local rugby club. It was awesome being close to the action. I still remember being 6 years old and being 2 metres away and watching one of our rough centres grab one of the fairy tale wingers and flip him on his back and pull his hair while the whole crowd giddy and get the wanker, you know?
Right. Did you have to carry a bucket of sand back in those days, Paul?
Yeah, for sure. That's how it was. My dad was the old toe poker.
Right.
Oh, and how much did you get paid?
Oh, just soft drinks and lollies. That was about it. But
I did the same thing for West Rugby League Club from the age of six, Paul. God, it was a great time. Same thing, chips and a can of Coke.
Yeah, that's it. I'd still do it now if I could.
Yeah, I'm with you. Family wouldn't be as happy. It'd be a bit weird.
You're not six anymore, boys.
Yeah. Big breakfast on Triple M.
Our Kiwi Prime Minister, because I'm saying it's a collegiate thing, Anzac, Jacinda Ardern was here week before last, meeting with our Prime Minister. Right. And one of the things that she brought up was this thing that's going on in Australia now, where if a New Zealander gets into trouble, we just extradite them. We just kick them back to their own country.
Peter Dutton likes booting anyone out. If you're from somewhere else and you commit a crime, off you go.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a different thing with Kiwis. I think that there's this fellowship and familial thing across the ditch that we have. And Jacinda Ardern said this, that there's New Zealanders being extradited back to New Zealand, and they're people that have lived in Australia. A lot of them have been born in Australia and may never have actually set foot in New Zealand. They're still New Zealand citizens. And we're sending them home. And I don't agree with it. I think that we should actually say, well, these people have, you know, been ours, and so we've got to own the problem too. Because basically what it's saying is, all right, you've messed up, but we have no interest in rehabilitating you or offering you a second chance here.
We have to put
them
into jail first. Why don't they leave the courthouse and go straight to New Zealand jail? Why do we have to put them in our jail? And it's not until we release them from jail that they get sent over to New Zealand. So we've tried to rehab them. We've paid heaps, $120,000 a year to keep them in jail.
Well, the most recent one was the coward punch on the Goldie, and that bloke was sent home. And I think
there was another one, that Cole Miller, the good water polo player got killed here 18 months ago. His killer immediately got out of...
Did he get out of jail?
Yep.
He was an accomplice sent home to New Zealand. What's
and I
wrong
understand
with that?
That it's, you know, very emotive stuff, and people say, well, yeah, we want to punish people who've done the wrong thing, and that's what happens in the courts. You send them to jail. But this compounding effect of just saying, do you know what, we're just going to get rid of anything that we can't deal with and send them back to New Zealand, I disagree with. I reckon that we've got to own the problem as well. And
New Zealand? Is this an Anzac thing?
This
or is it
just
everyone?
New Zealand. I reckon this
so
is our closest neighbour.
If it was an American,
neighbor.
Came from California, did something wrong, we should own that problem or not?
No, I'm just talking specifically about extraditing.
Tongan?
No, let's go. Okay, let's go South Pacific. Our Tongan, Samoan,
Indonesia.
New Zealand
what about we
brothers
go up
and
to
sisters.
Asia?
Let's just, I'm saying South, I'm being specific, South Pacific.
Why do we own anyone else's problem? Get rid of it. They're garbage.
No, they're not garbage. They've often been resident here for a long time. They are part of our community. And basically, you're also separating them from their family or whatever kind of safety net or community they've got around them. And you're just going, all right, done, get rid of it. I reckon it's easy votes for Dutton, and I reckon that we're turning our back on our brothers and sisters. our Anzac brothers and sisters.
Hold on, hold on. You Anzac. Have made a decision that you don't want to live in our community by committing an offence like hitting somebody as hard as you can and killing them. I don't want you in my community. You don't deserve to live in my community.
Mistakes are made, and yes, there are victims, and you've got to actually, you know, have a lot of compassion for the victim too, but part of it is embracing the person who's committed the offence. I don't want to extradite New Zealanders back to New Zealand. I want to say, come on, we're part of this problem. Let's solve it together.
No, I'm happy with good Kiwis. I want to get rid of bad Kiwis.
Well, let's crack a can.
The Big Breakfast's can of worms.
133353. The statement is we shouldn't deport anyone who was born here. Is that right, Robin Bailey?
Well, apparently, if you're a Kiwi, anyone else, it's fair game.
Yeah, I'm standing up for my...
Hold on, they're born here now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, some of them, Jacinda Ardern said, some of these people have never set foot in New Zealand.
Well, they're not Kiwis, are they?
Well, they've got Kiwi parents.
Does anyone know anything about this? I see what you are. Yeah.
Well, that isn't the can of worms, what citizenship they are. It's let's stop deporting New Zealanders back to New Zealand.
Okay. We should stop deporting New Zealanders.
No, we should send them straight out of court and don't even let them step foot in our jail so I don't have to pay for the bastards.
One
send
word,
them home.
Anzac.
We should stop deporting New Zealanders.
Two words, All Blacks.
RJ from Crestmead, what do you reckon?
Mate, I just don't pick on the Kiwis. Anyone from any nation that screws up majorly like that should be deported, because why should the innocent people have to pay for them to go into jail? Because, you know, it's a two-way street, they need to go.
But yeah, you invite someone over your house to do something wrong, you get rid of them.
Okay, thanks, RJ.
Yeah, I agree. It's not about Kiwis, it's everybody.
Scott from Geebung, what do you reckon?
Not at all. They shouldn't be deported. What happens is they go to jail, they serve their time, and to Marto's point, when you've been in jail, you've been rehabilitated, they could be a very good functioning member of the community afterwards.
That's right. They could give back, Scott. Once you've done your time, once you've done your crime, you do your time, and yep. Shouldn't you have a second chance?
Well, there's enough players in the NRL that have.
Great call.
Thanks, Scott.
Everything can always be brought back to rugby league.
Yes, it can. And Anita from Bow Desert. Now, you have personal experience with this. What happened to your son?
5 years ago, we raised our children in the country, and our son went onto the Gold Coast and was cowed punched, and he's now living with a brain injury, and our whole family has been devastated because three men, we don't know their names, we don't know who they were, all we know were they were from New Zealand, and they got away with scot-free, cowed punched our son, and we live with it for the rest of our lives. So I agree, one strike and you're out. You are a guest of our country. We do everything to raise our Australian children, and, you know, we're a multicultural nation, yes, so I agree that doesn't matter who it is, but, you know, one strike, you're out.
Anita, were those men ever arrested for the damage they did to your son?
They think it was the same men that cowed punched Private Joe Arnold, but they wouldn't confess to the cowed punch to our son.
Oh, so no CCTV. No. God, I'm sorry, yeah. Anita.
And Anita, how's your son now? You say he has a brain injury. How does he live?
He lives. He manages with, you know, apps and... But, yeah, you know, very limited memory and, you know, they basically shook his memory away from him. So, yeah, just devastating that, you know, we're very proud to live in Australia and we're very proud to raise our children in a beautiful country. But, you know, in New Zealand there is a mentality where it's fight on Friday nights, and they bring that over here. Some of them do, not all of them.
Some of them do.
Mm. Yeah, my father's from New Zealand, but... you know, we would never have expected that we do the right thing and raise our kids in the country environment for 10 years. And one night out on the Gold Coast and 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. My son's in an induced coma in the A&E at the Gold Coast.
Oh, no one wants that call.
No, they don't.
That is very sad.
Sorry, love.
We're incredibly happy that happened to your family, Anita. Unfortunately, that's not the popular opinion on 133353, 60% saying no, if they're rehabilitated, they've done their time, don't need to deport them.
Yeah. So there's the other can of worms. Why do we have to put them through our jail? Why do you have to pay for them?
You've had your go, mate. You've had a crack.
Because it's our problem.
That is an interesting
one. It's our problem?
Yeah, of course it is. If someone commits a crime here, then you've got to go through due process.
The Big Breakfast.
Whoa.
Okay, let's not.
For another day. It is the Big Breakfast on Brisbane's Triple M.
back in my day.
There was a funny old show on Channel 9 late Sunday afternoon. They're talking about icons and they talked about the 30-year anniversary of Expo 88. For anyone, and we keep finding out there's so many people who haven't lived in Brisbane all their life. This was the year that Brisbane grew up, Expo 88. By the when it started, we went, oh, are we ready for the world to come? And by the end, we went, oh, will that end? And Brisbane never changed from that moment. It was the day it went from a town to a city.
Well, I remember down south, a lot of people were packing up and moving to Brisbane to work on Expo 88 because all of a sudden there was lots of jobs available and people were moving up here to work in the different pavilions and in Expo for, you know,
like
the whole 6 months.
Like out of work actors, do you mean?
And, well, no, just suburbanites. So just went, anyone. I'm going north.
It got busy.
Because it's going to be great, and I just can't wait. It's going to be great, and I just can't wait.
That was the theme song. Right.
We'll show the world together. Probably sung by Julie Anthony that sang every song in the 80s.
There were passports you could get. There was season tickets. You got a passport, and when you went to all the pavilions, I didn't go to the pavilions. When I'd get there at night time after work, there'd be queues and I'd go off to the German beer hall to do the chicken dance. That would be my life.
So how was it set up? Was every nation on earth represented?
Not
or
really.
Just looking, a handful?
No, well,
how
a
many
lot
were
of
there?
Them. There were a fair few.
The
but
Korean one was popular because they had a Korean barbecue, I think, in there.
Yeah, the New Zealand one, there were queues all the
that
time.
That was enormous.
They had an extradition centre.
Canadian one, they had the Canadian one, they had a hand strength, I remember that. And the USA one, they had a baseball throwing speed comp.
It gave birth to South Bank, really.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, 133353, we want your memories.
What was that
of Expo 88?
Got a little bit from the show on Sunday. Here's some of the entertainment. And it might sound daggy now, it was 30 years ago.
Audiences were treated over the 6 months to a $42 million program of entertainment. Members of the 65-strong marching band, like Daryl Bowers, are still playing together to this day and still having a ball.
I was in the percussion, the drum line.
Oh, and, that's enough.
He was in the drum line. Bless your little cotton socks, Dash.
Sounds daggy now. No. Sounded pretty daggy back then.
It wasn't, mate. But it was everything.
They were redeveloping Kangaroo Point, and that's how it came to be.
What do you mean?
The architect charged with redeveloping it for the city said, why don't we get Expo here and start to redevelop South Bank that way to see whether it, you know, works.
You know, it was just a bunch of old warehouses and old sheds, and they knocked it all down, and oh, God, it was good.
Back in my day.
Where do you start? I put it on Facebook, and people have gone nutso for Expo 88. It was so exciting if you were in your late teens. It was exciting for everyone in Brisbane because we were dull before this happened.
But just think about how simple that time was too. You know, but way before social media,
phones.
When you'd go out and boys meet girls and girls would meet boys. And
oh, it was great.
They say we went from a small country town and we grew up in Expo 88.
Do you think that's the truth?
I do. It was definitely a turning point. The pubs were open. Everyone just went nuts. Everyone, that became our central point. We never really had anything like that before.
Right.
There was a monorail, mate. There was a monorail.
Mate, you've got a monorail.
You have arrived.
Living in Springfield.
Well, Mick of Brackenridge, tell us about your memories of Expo 88.
Yeah, morning, guys. Yeah, it was great. Me and a mate of mine were 16-year-olds. We used to make our way in from Inala and go to get these hot dog stands or a big illegal hot dog stand set up. We'd go and sell outside the terminus and the ship in and all that and sell hot dogs all night.
Oh, so you were, mate, you were cranking money out of it when you were 16.
Hundreds. We'd do like over 20 dozen hot dogs a night each.
Whoa.
Illegal hot dog stands.
Give a free hot dog to the police and to the bouncers.
They'd look the other way.
They'd let you
when
off.
When the council's coming, we'd get a warning, wheel our hot dog stands around behind the pub for half an hour.
But the pub was open forever, wasn't it, if I can remember?
Oh, yeah. 24-hour pubs, first time, yeah. We were making hundreds of dollars a night each and then going into the tops on the in the Meyer Centre the next day to blow it all.
Oh, tops.
You're still in hot dogs, Mick?
Ah, yeah, love them.
Well done, Mick.
He's not making money from them anymore.
Just
Sarah of Wilston, tell us about Expo 88 for you.
I was in a marching band, so we were allowed to stay out after the marching band did their performance.
Oh, glorious.
And it was the first time my parents would just leave me out there, and I was only about 14, but it was really safe.
Sarah,
and they were very happy.
Sarah, there was a nightly parade, wasn't there? Was your marching band in the nightly parade that used to go down the street, wander around?
Yes, And we did performances in the piazza.
In the piazza.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And mum and dad would have been in the ship in or the plough in.
Actually, my mum was working in the cheese pavilion.
In the which one?
Cheese. I think that was a cheese pavilion or a dairy pavilion.
Cheese, or was it the Swiss pavilion where they were doing fondues 24 all the time? Oh, God, there were some strange things went on. Anyway.
Thank you.
Are you checking out the cheese pavilion?
I am. I'm trying to. There was a Cadbury pavilion. Maybe that was the cheese. No, that's chocolate. Leon of Browns Plains, what do you remember from Expo?
How are we going?
Yeah, good, mate.
Good.
Mate, lots of fond memories from Expo, but the one that stands out the most would have to be lining up for about 3 hours in the hot sun and then finally getting to sit in Kit from Knight Rider.
Oh, the car from Knight Rider with Hasselhoff.
Yep. It was awesome. You got to talk to it. You got to sit in there for about 10 minutes. There was obviously a little control booth pretty close by with a lame dude on a microphone answering your questions best he could. But it was fantastic. Yeah, it was awesome. It was the exact same car from the show. It was awesome. It was a great highlight. I was about 8 years old then too.
Did the lame dude on the microphone, did he have a good American accent, or was he just some Aussie bloke going, yeah, g'day, mate, I'm Kit?
No, well, it obviously was synthesized, so it sounded exactly like Kit from the show.
Oh, how exciting.
Maybe it was the same guy, I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, Leon or Robin, have a look. Was there something called the Aqua Show? It retold the story of how Australia was discovered. High divers diving into little barrels and stuff.
The Aquacade, which was not right near the Queensland Maritime Museum.
Oh, God. All I remember is the chicken dance at the German beer hall. God, what a time.
Our halcyon days, Expo 88.
Plumbers become super plumbers, installing a super quick water dispenser. Superquick.com.au.